Curated by Karen Lang.
This is Double J.
I know 2019 was a crazy year for idols. You toured and toured. Yeah. When did the ideas for Ultra Mono sort of germinate?
Straight away after Joy came out, really. We never stopped writing. And with every album, we start with a title and artwork normally comes to mind with a theme around it. And then I kind of build the idea around the album. And then we start writing the song specifically to those ideas, with the idea that if we've got boundaries, we can all work within them and work together better, because we're very different people. And it's important for us to kind of understand each other moving forward, because we write democratically. We don't want it to be some sort of autocracy. And I was going through a lot of self-doubt around writing, and I just wanted to focus on that idea of self-awareness as a way of progress and understanding what self-care really meant. And I was going through CBT therapy, and I just came to the idea, Ultra Mono, this like monolithic thing where everything, all of your components, whether seen as good or bad outside of you, are part of you. And to accept that is a way of moving forward. And I wanted to kind of make that as an album. I saw it as like a big engine, like one engine where all the components work together. So Bone and I worked on the idea of how to make the sound of that, of self-acceptance. And that's where it started.
Well, that's a challenging thing to try to do, how to make the sound of self-acceptance.
Yeah, I mean, that was the challenge. But it came pretty quickly, to be honest. We thought about the idea of what that meant, which is like a holistic sound, you know, like everything, you know, if you totally accept yourself in the moment of now, you are just there. It's like from Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, and Anthony DeMello's Awareness, where you get rid of the past and you get rid of the future and you just accept who you are in the moment and just be. And we thought that would sound like an impact, like a whole entity in one, which is where the artwork came from, that idea that everything works for the same thing. And we just wrote every song around a single part. And if we wrote anything around that part that didn't accentuate, accelerate, or kind of contrast that single point, then we didn't put it in the song. And like it was that idea of not giving yourself time to overthink or leave room for self-doubt. So, I mean, I wrote half the album in the vocal booth, like with the idea that there would be that momentary feeling. And we've always wanted to capture our live sound. So we always record, we give ourselves three takes in the studio for each song. Normally we do it in one or two takes and then, you know, just be, I guess is the best way to describe it.
It's a pretty good way to be in the world at the moment, actually, just to be in this crazy year.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. We came from a point of isolation, Ultra Mono. I just didn't realize, you know, like fighting isolation when really what I needed to do was accept myself and not try and fight my own company or fight my own past or fight my own faults or imperfections and just accept myself in the moment. And that's what we did. And now we're really learning to practice that at the moment. So this album can come at a better time for us, really, or for me at least.
Joe, you kick off the album with a mighty track, The Pummeling Sound of War, and it's really intense. Who are you declaring war on?
Well, that was the first song we wrote for the album, and that came at the very start, that's the first thing we ever wrote, actually, after Joy. And it was, you know, the conflict is within. It was about self-doubt. The war is on myself, really. It's more of a understanding of the self-conflict, inner conflict, and like getting through it. And then it, you know, the idea is that we're in a state of class war in Britain, and I'm sure in Australia and everywhere else in the world. And I think one of the reasons why right-wing politics is on the rise is because it's because of inner conflict. You know, people are reactionary when they're scared. It's fight or flight. And I think a lot of the voting and a lot of the decisions made towards party politics and towards the right wing are made from people who are angry or scared or miseducated, or misinformed or whatever. But that's what happens. And I think for me, it was about my actions are affected by my emotions. And that's something that Idols have always kind of tried to focus on. It's not party politics, but the politics of yourself, and how if you change your patterns of thoughts and then feelings, it changes your patterns of behavior. And what we wanted to do is try and make people feel like they're a small part of something much bigger than themselves. And if they learn to listen to themselves and care for themselves, they'll have the confidence to listen to others who might not agree with them. But yeah, war's about the war going on in your head, really.
Is playing in Idols good for what's going on in your head?
I don't know. I haven't played in Idols in a very long time. But yeah, no, yeah, it is. It saved my life. I was a drug addict, alcoholic, abusive man. And over the last 15 years, I've learned to not be those things anymore. And that's through learning to talk out loud and to sing out loud. If you never say these things out loud, it is just bottling them up, and they come out in toxic ways. It sounds cliched, but yeah, this band has saved my life. No lie.
I'm talking with Joe Talbot from Idols. We're talking about the brand new Idols album, Ultra Mono. You've got Jenny Beth singing on Le Touche Pas Moi.
Yeah, don't worry about pronouncing it right. It's not the right French anyway. No. It's Ne Me Touche Pas, is how you say don't touch me.
Okay.
But I got it wrong in the studio, and Jenny told me to keep it wrong because it's more honest. She was right.
It's a song about consent. And has that come out of your own experience in live shows?
Yeah, I mean, only a couple. There was like Alexandra Palace. We had a few people send us messages sharing their experience of basically men being abusive. So I wanted to change the narrative and write a song that made people feel safe in our arena to create a new, like, you know, feeling of, yeah, we're all here, respect each other or leave. And Kathleen Hannah did it really well with Girls to the Front. And I just wanted to do it myself. And because we didn't have a song like that. And, you know, why not just write an anthem of respect?
Creatively for this album, Joe, as a group in studio compared with the earlier albums? Were there particular tools you used to sort of trigger new creative directions?
I mean, we wrote, for the first time, we wrote the album around production in mind with each song. So we wanted to create that sound of impact and like a sound of self-belief, you know? And that came from thinking about how to make that sound. And that's about taking out noise, you know. A lot of rock music and Idols included in that It's five people playing different things at the same time, or a lot of things at the same time, and that creates a lot of noise and a lot of frequencies, which is great for live because it smashes you in the face. But on record, it's really hard to balance. So we wanted to change that and use what Rick Rubin described himself as a reducer, and use that practice and take away the noise, like he did on Yeezus. And like, less noise allows for more volume, which is more impact. And when you're listening to a record in a car, if you've got room for subs and you've got room for high frequencies, it's gonna be louder and it's gonna be more impactful than if you've got five chubby white men playing different things at the same time. So we just worked on that. And like, we used the practices of techno and hip hop, and we completely changed the way we thought about sound and the way we wrote the songs. Yeah. And that was a long learning process, and we got there in the end.
I know you worked with Nick Launay again on this album, who's an amazing producer. He's the king of big drums, isn't he? Big sound.
Yeah. I mean, we were very lucky to work with Nick Launay and his production, in terms of we knew what we wanted from his sound, which was the violence, the violent tones of drums and guitars, that mid frequency stuff. And we wanted to be as impactful as the kind of noise solo in No Pussy Blues on Grinder Man, and we got it.
I'm glad you mentioned Grinder Man, actually, because when I first listened to this Idols album, I was thinking about the Bad Seeds and Grinder Man kind of at their most brutal, and how there was something about your sound that kind of reminded me of that in a way. How
Good.
much of an impact has Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds and Grinder Man had on Idols over the years?
A lot, really. I mean, obviously, my writing is nothing like Nick Cave's in terms of lyrics, and the way we write songs are completely different. But as a band, Grinder Man and the Bad Seeds, they are two of the most visceral, impactful, beautifully imperfect live performances I've ever seen. They're heroes of mine. They
And
always have been.
you've got Warren Ellis on this album as a guest. How did that happen?
We paid him £2 million.
Lucky Warren.
Yeah, no, we didn't. So he's a friend of Nick Launay's, obviously, and they recorded Skeleton Tree at the same studio as we were using in Paris, well, outside Paris, called La Frette. And Warren Ellis lives in Paris, so he came and surprised us as a visit, and we kind of hung out for about 3 hours, eating lots of cookies. And then, if Warren Ellis is in the studio and you're recording Grounds, you don't not ask him to get on the track. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. So he, what does he do on grounds?
He gives a hype man, hey, that's it. That's his contribution. Do you know what I mean? He is the best hype man that's ever existed.
That's true.
Yeah, we're very lucky to have him on it.
Not a single thing has ever been mended by you standing there and saying you're offended. Go ahead, tell them what I've intended. I'll say what I mean, do what I love, and fucking send it. Do you hear that thunder? That's the sound of strength in numbers.
I know that you moved to some pretty big stages last year, didn't you? Like the trajectory of the band kind of went through the roof. How did that affect your sound and the way you thought about the music, just being able to play larger stages, bigger crowds?
We're pretty loud as a band. Before Ultra Mono came out, we weren't struggling to fill rooms with our music. And we're five peacocks in our own different ways, so we don't mind bigger stages. Gives us bigger room to strut and get our feelings out there. But like, Ultra Mono was built for bigger rooms, We used the kind of practice. That was another thing we used and thought about in our writing and our production, was that idea of being aware of your surroundings as a bigger artist. You know, you've got to then accept the fact that you're not playing in pubs anymore, and just do what Wagner did and write the music for the space, which is less noise, more volume. You know, if you had an orchestra playing 50 different things in a big room, the reverberation would be inaudible. But if you had 50 people playing the same thing at the same time, the impact of that would be life-changing. So that's what we want to do, change your life.
Oh, well, I think you've changed a lot of people's lives already, Joe, actually, because I know that there's so many people around the world who adore idols. There's a kind of tribe, I guess, isn't there, that is part of your circle. How much do you have your existing audience in mind when you write?
My existing audience for when I write is me. I need to, like, everything I talk about in our songs, everything I've written is for me. I was not a good person 20 years ago to myself or anyone else. And I realized after a series of events that I needed to change my life, otherwise I'd end up making irreversible mistakes. So I did. I changed. And that idea that I'm preaching to people and telling them how to live is wrong. It's wrong. What I'm doing is telling myself that I am a beautiful person and to care for myself in order to not make the same mistakes I did.
So, a song like Mr. Motivator. Are you Mr. Motivator?
Yeah, if I don't ramp myself up to get through some days, I wouldn't get through some days. So I need to tell myself to smash the day, and I do.
There's a lot of great lines in that song. It must have been fun to write.
I mean, great lines is a strong word. Do you know what I mean? Great. I mean, they're all right. You know, they're a bit haphazard.
What's your favourite?
What's my favorite?
Yeah.
Oh. I like the idea. I can picture Flavor Flav on the back of John Wayne in the club. Do you know what I mean?
A great image.
Yeah. Shout out to Flavor Flav.
Absolutely.
And definitely not John Wayne. I don't know if you can tell from all the basically stupid lyrics I've written in there that are both very childlike and powerful at the same time. It was the most unthinking I've ever done for a record, and it's the most unthinking I will ever do for a record. It was a beautiful process, but I didn't think about any of the lyrics, and that's why I love it so much. You know, obviously there are some misunderstandings. People think that Model Village is about villages and not I hate villagers, which is not true. It's about England and me hating England. For anyone that doesn't understand that, I hate my country right now. I don't hate the people. I don't hate the architecture. I hate the way the government is treating the poor, and I hate the decisions made by the populace based on fear and hate. But you know, it's a rubbish time for everyone.
Joe, tell me about the song Danker that finishes the album. You reference a beautiful song by Daniel Johnston, and it's just about the anniversary now, the first anniversary of his passing.
Yeah, well, it's also the anniversary of us recording the album. So Danker was going to be an instrumental song, and then the day of recording Danker, Daniel Johnston died, and I just thought, for me, Daniel Johnston's one of the universe's best kept secrets, really. I think, like, his vulnerability and his naivety is such a strength for his music. And his lyrics are so beautiful because of it. And it's something that I wanted to embody, is a sense of naivety and vulnerability with all of my songs, not just with Ultra Mono. And I just, what better ode than to throw in what I think is the most beautiful lyric he ever wrote into our song that ends the album. I wanted it to have a sense of hope. And there's no one that injects a sense of hope more than Daniel Johnston.
True love will find you in the end. That's the one that you used, isn't it? It's such a beautiful song.
Yeah, it's a stunning, stunning song. Yeah, I love it.
Joe, when you're on stage playing to an audience,
like I could smash the universe.
Even when you've played 200 shows in a year, is it hard to hold on to that?
Like I could smash the universe with the help of four friends. I mean, by the end of a long year, you carry each other, but you still feel like you, it's pure ecstasy, man. It is. It's a beautiful process that we've learned to just let go on stage and give ourselves wholly to the exchange we have with our audience. You know, like I think Bowen and Lee kind of ramp themselves up a bit, you know, get their muscles going. But I don't. I just go for a poo and then I go on stage and I tear it up because it's the best thing in the world.
Curated by Karen Lang.
This is Double J.